Our goal is not to fix anybody. You cannot fix grief because those people are not broken. They have a broken heart. The goal is to help them heal themselves simply by witnessing their grief, supporting them through it, listening to them, which is so important. You have to be an active listener. People want to talk about their grief.
Welcome, everyone, to podcast number 183, Renew Your Mind. With us today, we have Senior Pastor Paul Gruenberg. We have retired Pastor Barry Sweet. I'm going around the table this time. We have Pastor Jeremy Theroux. We have our Youth and Family Director and also our contemporary band leader, Jordan Kettlewell. And myself, Dana Hall, as a moderator. And our very special guest, Julie Kettlewell. And I'll let you introduce yourself, Julie.
All right. Thank you, Dana. As Dana said, my name is Julie Kettlewell, and I am here to talk about grief. I am a certified grief educator, and as a grief educator, my mission and my purpose is to raise the bar on grief literacy. What that means is just raise the level of understanding. There is so much that the general public does not know about grief, that they don't understand about grief, which makes it so much harder when you are grieving to ever find your way through that tangled mess. Mm-hmm. So I educate people to help people get through those murky waters.
Okay. So I think you gave us a description of what a certified grief educator is. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want to expound upon?
Well, the technical definition is that we are committed to providing the highest level of grief support through education, experience, and often insights that, you know, some people in their grief would not have. So we help to raise that level of insightfulness so that they can begin to look at how they're dealing with their grief and see where they might see it from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we help guide through that. As a grief educator and as a grief support person, someone who's leading a support group, our goal is not to fix anybody. You cannot fix grief because those people are not broken. They have a broken heart, but they are not broken as if, you know, as like when you break your leg and you go to the doctor and they put a cast on, they fix you, you're good to go. You can't do that with grief because it's not something physical. And so the goal is to help them heal themselves simply by witnessing their grief, supporting them through it, listening to them, which is so important. You have to be an active listener. People want to talk about their grief because in the whole world of grief, their own grief is the only grief they see. And so other people might have something similar going on, but to that one person, they are the only person in the world who has ever felt this way, and they're never going to get over it. And, you know, they're just going to just one day just die and be sad the whole time until they get to that point. That is not true. Grief heals. We can heal people in grief, but they have to do all the work. And other people will quite often want to say, well, you know, you ought to be over that by now. Okay. Don't ever say that to someone in grief because you better be ready to run if you do, because it's just so hurtful and so offensive. Mm-hmm. Because there is no timeline for that healing. Mm-hmm. You set your own pace. And it's not a matter of moving on. You can't move on from grief. What you do is you move into it. You become what the grief is. A better way to describe this is, okay, when you lose a loved one, your world comes crashing down. You can't see the forest for the trees. You're numb. You're just on remote control. You're on autopilot. You're not thinking. You're not rational about things. It's hard to get through your daily duties. The grief becomes your life. So if this is the grief, you are the little dot in the center of that huge mass of grief. Okay, as you begin to heal, and you can do this through the support of people that will witness your grief, people that will listen to you, people that will help you achieve healing, sooner or later, that circle starts to get smaller and smaller, and you in the center become bigger and bigger until you have grown around your grief. The grief never, ever goes away. It's with you for life, but it becomes that smaller part of that circle. It's always there, but you have grown beyond it to where, yes, I understand it now. I can live a normal life. And once you have learned how to grieve fully, then you can live fully again. That was a long description of what I do as a grief educator.
Very helpful.
But I educate others to help others.
That analogy, actually, that visual really, for me, lended a lot more definition even to just to what grief is.
Oh yeah.
In general, we all kind of know, but I love how you said we can heal, but you can't fix it.
Right.
Right.
Because in that for me went to really defining it as grief being, you're right, you can't fix it, because if you're experiencing grief, you've lost something that's never going to come back.
That's right.
And so there is no fix. And so, trying to, shrink that bubble down and gain a little bit more control over it, a little more control over your life where the grief isn't all encompassing, you're still not fixing what the problem was. You're learning how to
cope,
how to live with that.
You're right. You're managing.
Instead of live controlled by it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. You need to be in control and be able to manage that. And when you have a little relapse, hopefully we'll have learned enough through grief support or through other forms of education to know, to recognize it, to catch it, and go, okay, now I need to do this, and now I need to do this. You need to have your go-tos for when that happens. Mm-hmm. Like, I quite often, and I'm just going to say this, it happens a lot in church, but it has happened in other places where I've been somewhere and something just activates a memory of that time. And all of a sudden I realize that I've got tears in my eyes. Mm-hmm. And so then I have to quick change my mindset, because I have to get through whatever it is I'm attending or participating in. And it just wouldn't look good, Five's just sitting there crying. So you learn how to pull those things back and get a handle on them. But for a long time, that's not even a possibility. It takes a while to get to that point.
And where can we get to the point where we can allow ourselves, even 6 months or a year down the road, to cry or to grieve and to say, I need to do this, instead of closing it down all the time?
Well, I'll tell you, there's actually I think that's kind of a two-sided answer. In the beginning, when you're in active grief, which is right after it happens, that's all you can do.
That's all you do.
That's all you can do.
And that's okay.
And that is way okay. And, for the first several months or even the first year, or even what we define as early grief, is the first 2 years. In those first couple of years, when you're still in early grief, that's going to happen a lot. And again, you have to help people understand that it's okay.
Hey.
It's okay. And, if you want to, I remember somebody who was at my daughter's funeral called me 4 or 5 days later and said, "Would you like to go to lunch?" "No. No. I am in my pajamas. I'm going to be in my pajamas for probably a while and my eyes are bloodshot." So, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't she wasn't thinking. It wasn't even a reasonable request. But then I felt embarrassed about that. I felt like I had done something wrong, or was I supposed to be ready mm-hmm. to go out to lunch? I didn't know that.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I didn't know. And so, but then I came to realize after a period of time that, you know, I'm having a hard time today and I'm not getting dressed and I'm just going to sit in my chair with my book or watch TV.
Giving yourself
and
permission.
I'm just going to give myself permission to do it, and it's okay. And nobody can tell me it's not okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's the problem, is that we are so often, when you're in grief, you so often hide in the shadows. Mm. And because you think, well, nobody really understands anyway, and you've got this thing in the back of your mind going, I should be better by now, because so and so, you know, was, you know, 2 weeks after that loss, they were out setting up a nonprofit to do that, and I'm sitting in the chair in my bathrobe. So, you know, you start comparing yourself to others and thinking you're not good enough, and you start feeling that little bit of
something's wrong with you.
Something's wrong.
And you're also in isolation.
And you're that's right. That goes right into that. And so now you have no outside contact other than the people that live in your house. And even then, there's not a lot of talk going on, because everybody in the house
is hurting,
is grieving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it is such a lonely time, and it's so hard. And it took me forever to actually reach out and talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. Because of the stigma and the shame, and you don't want to feel like you already feel like it's just you. You know, everybody else is walking around and the world is spinning, and you're just sitting because you're just in a state of inertia. You can't move. And I think this came up in Jesse's first podcast, in the mental health podcast, that. And Pastor Paul mentioned that quite often the first place people go is to their pastor before they'll go to a mental health professional or anyone else. And that is very true, and that's exactly what I did, mm-hmm. because I thought, well, if I can trust anybody, I know I can trust my pastor. Mm-hmm. And whereas I had a really bad experience decades ago with a mental health professional, and it made me a little mistrustful.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know now that there's so many good ones out there. I got a bad one, mm-hmm. you know, first mm-hmm. time out. So, right. And so that has changed my whole perception on that as well. But that is true, that a lot of people go to their pastor first. And so... You know, that kind of puts a lot of pressure on the pastors.
Well, on that note. Yeah.
Well, let me ask a question, because this is important. What do you wish you would have known that might have helped you work through your grief? What do you wish somebody might have done to help you through your grief? What are those things that would have helped you I don't want to say grieve better. I don't know if that's even a proper way to say it.
More effectively.
More effectively grieve.
Yeah. You know, again, I could give you 50 answers to that question. But I think for me personally, I think what happened initially needed to happen. I'm I'm very much a loner, mm-hmm. By choice. I don't need to have a lot of people around me. I don't need to always be going out to social things or getting in touch with people or talking on the phone. You know, I'm just kind of a loner. Mm-hmm. And so when that happened, it's like my normal personality just went to an extreme and I closed myself off.
So what do you wish would have happened?
That is so hard to say because all I could think about then was I just wish the world would go away and leave me alone. But when I finally started to think a little more clearly, I thought what I really needed was for our family to talk as a family, but we weren't able to do that yet. Mm-hmm. And that took a long time because everybody was experiencing the grief differently, and we weren't able to help each other because we didn't know what was going on inside of us individually. And so it would have been nice if somebody had just come and just sat there with me. You know, you sit over there, I'll sit over here. How about we just watch cartoons today? Would that be all right with you? Because everything else just seems too scary and heavy. That's what I wish.
Just somebody's presence.
Don't talk.
Yep.
Just let's watch Bugs Bunny. You know, I know that sounds ridiculous.
Not at all.
That's kind of.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a really good point because as people don't know how to deal with others suffering through grief, they don't know what to do, but just being there.
Right.
Now, that might have been difficult because you wouldn't want me to come sit with you because you at that time you didn't know me.
Right.
It has to be somebody
that you know
you're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because you don't know if halfway through, you know, the Looney Tunes run that I'm just going to start crying because I don't know. Porky Pig fell off the bench. I don't know. I mean, I'm using this ridiculous example, but it's not that far-fetched because I still do that some mornings. I just, I'll turn on this cartoon show because I'm not hearing about all the horrible things going on in the world. And every once in a while, an old cartoon will come up that Jordan and I used to crack up over, and I'll just sit there and watch it and laugh, and gets my day off to a good start. I mean, I know it sounds weird, but
it's not weird at all.
So, the Bugs Bunny hoedown?
Yeah, with the Fields and McCoys? Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Every time I just laugh out loud because we would just hoot over that.
And sometimes, though, especially in, you know, in a grief time, I think those moments, you're right, are so important. And it's important to recognize, too, that you're talking about personal experience and everybody grieves, you know, differently, obviously.
Right.
But I think at the core, there's, especially in that beginning stage, something light. Something that's just, it's not heavy. You don't have to think about it. It's not trying to fix the problem.
Lighthearted.
It's just not dark. Because grief so often just feels like darkness.
It is.
Well, you're not alone.
That's right.
In that. Somebody's walking with you.
Well, I'm not even talking about the company part of it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like that part, you know, obviously is helpful too. But I mean, just in those moments, the actual mindless, lighthearted part of it. Which sounds silly. Like you said, it's a silly example, but I think that part is so important. And because and here's why I say this, it's important to recognize that it doesn't have to be something powerful and light that's fixing the problem because it can't in that intense grief moment. And I say that specifically as, you know, on the Renew Your Mind podcast, we're talking about spiritual faith-based things. When you're in the heat of that moment, sometimes somebody coming to be with you and talking to you and even sharing the love of Christ isn't helpful because that's heavy.
That's right.
It's light. It's beautiful. It's perfect. It's a perfect love, but that's also a heavy thing.
It's very emotional.
So it's emotional. And sometimes you just need that, like, I need to watch Bugs Bunny hit somebody with a 2x4.
That's right.
You know?
And you know, but to take that one step further, sometimes if something makes you laugh, if someone makes you laugh or a cartoon makes you laugh or a sitcom makes you laugh and you hear yourself laughing out loud and you go, where did that come
from? You remember that
you can. I didn't know that I could still do that. And then you go from euphoria because, hallelujah, I can still laugh at the world, and then you go, oh, I shouldn't be laughing. Mm-hmm. And then you pull yourself right back down into the grief. Yes, the shame comes in and you go, I shouldn't be laughing. Yeah, you should be. Mm-hmm. You know, that's part of the understanding, the literacy, is we need people to know that it's okay. You know, in those early stages, whatever feels right to you is okay. If you want to curl up in the fetal position all day long, it's okay. Just do it. Tomorrow will be a new day. Mm-hmm. If you want to sit and laugh with some friends, if somebody thinks, looks at you and says, oh, look at her, she just lost a loved one, and look at her, she's laughing like nothing happened. Well, you know, that's part of the healing. Right. And but see, that's where this whole lack of understanding is
so,
on the topic.
So how would, and I know this is a, how would helping people know and understand grief before the loss of a loved one, how would that help them? How might that have helped you?
Are you talking about anticipatory grief now?
I'm just talking about the general public. If we understand grief better, how does that arm us for when we experience
grief? So not a specific death, because that would be the anticipatory. But yes, in general, I think that the more we get this education out there, it will help us to know how to approach someone in grief, which everybody's really pretty illiterate on that. I mean, seriously, it's very scary. And that's probably the hardest part of the education, is making it not so scary, because it's always going to be, grief is, you know, death is very intimidating, and talking about it is very scary. But it's like anything else. It's, you know, if you slice your finger open and then it scabs over and it scars over, then it doesn't hurt if you spill salt in it anymore, because you've built up that tissue over it that protects you from it. And I noticed personally, the more I learned and the more I became educated on this topic, the easier it is for me to talk not just to you about it, but to talk to anybody about it at any time who asks me a question. But even one step further, it's enabled me to be better able to talk about my own, which was very hard for me, because I'm a very private person. I also wear my heart on my sleeve, so it doesn't take much to put me into a puddle. And so I don't like to do that, because that's embarrassing and people think, wow, you know, what's wrong with her? Well, you know, a lot of things, but the grief is just ever present. But I've been better able to speak openly about it. And so I think that's really, does that answer your question?
I mean, the more. Can I add on that, actually? Mm-hmm. Because what I'm hearing, you answer is, you know, Pastor Paul's asking, you know, if we arm ourselves ahead of time and that unforeseen grief incident happens, is that going to help? And what it still gravitates toward is, it's helping you now, knowing it now, but that's post grief incident. I think what you're saying is that can help, but also it seems like, to quote Mike Tyson, as you would naturally when you're talking about mental health and grief and in the spiritual realm. I mean, we know this guy's an expert.
Yeah.
To quote Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
So I think it's also fair to recognize that no matter how well equipped you are, when that really intense grief incident happens, and you can't prep for it.
No, you can't.
You really can't. For
it, and you can't ward it off.
I honestly don't even go down that road. I don't think you could prep for grief, but I think it gives us tools to help others.
Mm. Right.
Yes.
It does.
Into grief? Because I was scared to death. I wouldn't say anything because I was afraid I'd say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing.
Yes.
So now you've given us some tools.
And I think sometimes people of faith, that, you know, they believe in eternal life, and that the person, if they're a follower of Jesus, are with Jesus, and that's supposed to make them feel good. And when someone's died, you feel awful.
Terrible.
You know, and how come I'm not feeling joy for them?
Right.
And I'm feeling awful.
Right.
And they can't make sense of that.
That's right. It's
and it
just,
takes time to
right.
make
so
sense
So then
of
you're
that.
Fighting with yourself and you're yeah. having this, yeah, this battle.
So I think on the next, I think on the next pod, we should pick up with that and go back to what yep. was the really hot topic in our first pod with you, which is what do we say, what do we don't say?
Right.
So I think let's
right.
pick up yeah. with that again in the next one.
Let's give them a couple of things to say because we don't know what's going to happen between one and the other.
Okay. Well,
real quickly, one thing you can say is I'm sorry for your loss. Just acknowledge it. Don't put anything else on it. One of the things that Julia said before to me, I wish I had the right words, just know I care. Mm-hmm. Because those are true facts. You're not forcing anything into a person's life. You're just saying, I'm walking with you. I'm sorry. Third one, we'll leave it off with this one. I don't know how you feel because you don't. Don't ever say, I've lost so-and-so too. I know how you feel. Because as you said earlier, grief is so individualized.
It is.
So personal.
Yep. I don't know how you feel, but I'm here to help you any way I can. And just to leave it at that. That just shows that you care. And so I think if we leave off there and we pick it up at the next time.
Sounds good.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. So make sure to listen to our next podcast so we can continue this conversation. We come to you from the Gaylord Methodist Church and we would love to have you join us in person on Sundays. We have a traditional service at 9 a.m. and a contemporary at 10:45 a.m. Just a reminder, during Holy Week, we have several activities, and we just encourage you to go to our website, and we'll list them all out there. I'll have Thursday, Friday, and then Sunday services as well. So make sure to check those out, and you can contact us at 989-732-5380. We're located at 215 South Center Street in Gaylord, Michigan. And we just really appreciate you listening. Thanks for being our guest, Julie.
Thank you very much for inviting me.